You've just launched a new service in the cloud. The good news, it's wildly successful. The bad news, it's wildly successful. When a service is a hit, many things happen simultaneously. You need to keep up with demand, determine how end users are actually using the solution, and keep up with an ever-growing backlog of feature requests and bug fixes. What goes into preparing to launch a cloud service, especially on Azure? And what happens to that service when it becomes one of the fastest growing services on Microsoft Azure? This week, we are going to be talking about the Azure Kubernetes Service with Program Manager at Microsoft, Justin Luck. Welcome to Day 2 Cloud, part of the Packet Pushers network of podcasts. On Day 2 Cloud, we have a frank discussion of what happens when the cloud stops being polite and starts getting real. This is episode 16, and I am your host, Ned Bellavance, Ned1313 on the Twitters. I'd like to introduce to the listeners, Mr. Justin Luck. Welcome to the show, Justin. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your role at Microsoft?
Sure. Yeah, thanks for the intro. That was a really impressive introduction on the podcast, by the way.
Well, thank you.
My name is Justin Luck. I'm a program manager at Microsoft Azure. I've been working on AKS, ACI, and some work with virtual nodes. I used to work on VM extensions and some of the core compute, and it's been about 4 years now. So wow. We can dive right into what some of those acronyms mean.
Yeah, well, you threw a lot of acronyms out there. So let's see. AKS, we know, is the Azure Kubernetes Service, but there's also ACS and ACI and a bunch of other services. So since there's all these different ways to use containers, can you expand on what those different ways are and why Microsoft chose to go with Kubernetes as an additional service on top of all these other options?
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple of ways to approach this one. One is, I guess, from a historical context. So I think sometime in late or maybe mid 2016, the ACS service started getting ramped up, and that is Azure Container Service. So that was back before the winner of the Orchestrator Wars was really decided. We had, you know, Kubernetes was out there. Mesosphere had their product out there. Docker had a product out there. And it wasn't super clear. From Microsoft's perspective, we knew we wanted to give our customers the option. You know, these are a bunch of great open source options. We shouldn't be too opinionated about one because there wasn't really a consolidation at that point. So that was a way for you to easily bootstrap some kind of container orchestrator on top of Azure infrastructure. And over time, as we all know how this story ends, Kubernetes kind of emerged as the kind of the front runner there. And that's what drove some of the discussion and an investment into a managed Kubernetes service, which we now know as AKS. And at this point, ACS is set for end of life, I think, in January of next year, because we are keeping the lights on there. We're still servicing it, but we're not actively developing it. And all of that investment is going into AKS. And then for that question, another way to look at it, if you want to see how AKS kind of fits into the broader portfolio, is if you look at, you know, that classic layer cake of cloud technology. You know, at the bottom you have IaaS, and up at the very top you have functions as a service or FaaS. At the very bottom, I worked on a service called Azure Container Instances, and that's really an approach towards how do we make containers infrastructure primitive within cloud. If I want to come and deploy a singular container, I had to previously bootstrap a VM, get whatever my container runtime was running, maybe optimize an OS, and it wasn't super easy. And so we wanted to give you a way to just define a pod, and ACI really is as pods as a service as well, that then you can just say, hey, deploy, I don't want to see anything else. And so that's kind of your core infrastructure piece. With ACI, you don't get any of the niceties from an orchestrator. So you won't be able to do auto scaling, for example. You could write something yourself, or you could just move up that layer cake a little bit to AKS, which gives you all of the niceties of that orchestrator, you know, self-healing services, auto scaling. And this with it comes a little bit more complexity, but it comes with it a lot more power. So there's those two core services, and then you can conjoin those two together with a feature called virtual nodes. And that is a Kubernetes add-on that can live in your AKS cluster that just lets you say, hey, deploy my pods onto my nodes that exist in my fleet. But if I don't have any more nodes or I don't want to schedule them onto my nodes, I can just deploy them out into the ACI service. And so this is backed by an open source project called the Virtual Kubelet, which went GA back in May. So the virtual nodes first class offering is the Azure feature that's built on top of the virtual kubelet. And it basically is just an interface. And it's a way for you to write a Kubernetes YAML spec and deploy it through Kubernetes. And it can then go talk out to ACI. And the open source project also has integration for a couple of other provider container IaaS type services. But that's kind of the three core pieces that I particularly work on. And then I can hit on the last two, which the most relevant would be Azure Functions and Azure App Services. And then Service Fabric as well. But I kind of just dumped a ton of information.
That is a lot of information. And I knew there was a lot of different ways to run a container. That's a fun quiz I've seen at a few presentations is, how many different ways can you run a container in Azure? Go ahead and try and name them all. And somebody always misses one. So it's an impressive list. And I thought it was very interesting that ACS, if I recall correctly, that was not a managed container service. It would assist with the initial deployment of your container orchestration framework, whichever one you chose. But then it was kind of up to the customer beyond that to maintain both the masters of the orchestration as well as any of the worker nodes. That's correct, right? But AKS is not that.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. The ACS product really was just, like you mentioned, a bootstrapping mechanism. And anything you then ran on top of that Azure IaaS, you were kind of on your own to manage it. And as we all know, that is a pretty non-trivial overhead.
Right.
So yeah, AKS will take out the control plane management for a Kubernetes cluster. So our team will take on the ownership of that. And then you will just own the workers within your cluster. But we will take the niceties of creating the nodes that need to exist in your fleet. And if you need to do an upgrade or a scale, you can just call the AKS API. And right. So this is the stuff that we're really looking to make easier for you.
Right. You can get down to the business of actually just deploying your software, your pods, and not have to worry about managing the management layer, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you were initially figuring out AKS, how you might want to launch it, were there certain technical limitations that existed in ACS or App Service that you wanted to avoid when you were designing AKS?
Yeah, that's a good question. So one aspect which you just hit on was we really wanted it to be more of a managed service. And part of this meant, how do we tackle that trade-off between customers who want that full scheme of customization and the customers that don't want to see it at all? And that's kind of the world that I think Kubernetes itself is kind of living within, because we know that this is too difficult. This, and in general, in the community, there's a set of problems that we know we still need to solve and make easier. But at the end of the day, there's still going to be those customers with requirements down at the IaaS layer that need that degree of customization. So at least today, from the Azure perspective, we've approached it with two products, so to speak. So there's AKS, which is the managed offering. And I think as we continue to mature the service, we'll make it more and more managed. So if you don't want to see some of that complexity that can exist, we'll make it easier for you to just completely ignore it, and we'll take on some of that burden. But if you are a customer who really wants to, you know, fine-tune some of the control plane components that we would normally manage, that's what AKS Engine is really there for. And that is the natural evolution that was previously ACS. So AKS Engine. Yeah, it's on GitHub. We have a dedicated team on it that will, you know, keep it up to date and maintained. If you open an issue, they're really good about answering things like that. And that is the similar to the ACS world, where I just want help bootstrapping this orchestrator onto Azure infrastructure. I don't expect anyone to manage it, but there will be ongoing features that continue to roll into that open source project that you can then consume downstream.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I'd heard about AKS Engine, but I wasn't sure how it differentiated from just the AKS service. And so that makes a lot of sense now. It's an open source project that I could use to just stand up a Kubernetes cluster in my own IaaS instances and manage it myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and we're deeply invested in it as well, because the AKS service itself uses components of AKS Engine to bootstrap the clusters that we run and manage for you. So it's intertwined together, and you can choose at what stage you want to come in to get that degree of opinionation that you really want. Mm-hmm. But we're across the board extremely invested in the broader Kubernetes system and delivering the products that customers really need for their workloads.
Right. And I think that dovetails well into my next question, which is, Microsoft Azure is a business. And so I assume that when you're making product decisions, there's going to be business drivers behind them. So what were the business drivers behind launching AKS?
So one aspect is just, giving customers what they need. There's a huge focus on being customer driven within the broader Azure org, broader Microsoft. And when you start to see some of the market trends towards desiring containers, then you say, okay, well, there's at some point you'll build a Stride and orchestrator. Well, which one? And these are really conversations that happened a few years ago. But mm-hmm. the broader investment and needing to give customers what we knew they would need was part of that driver. The overall evolution of what the industry is trying to trend towards in terms of microservices, some of this immutable infrastructure, the benefits that the successful customers have seen, was just more fuel under that fire, that this would be something that would be required. So a lot of this started getting driven when Brendan Burns came and joined Azure, which for folks who aren't familiar, Brendan's one of the creators of the Kubernetes project. And so once he came in, there was a lot of internal discussion around, all right, how do we actually get some of this rolling? What's the real discussion that we should be having around the future service that we should be building? Another aspect of this was, how do we start getting other services platformed and start proliferating some of this Kubernetes operator knowledge so that we have the right people to actually build the right services? Mm-hmm. And one of the earliest ones was a product that I worked on called Cloud Shell. And so if people are familiar with that, that's a browser-based terminal that you can pull up in the Azure portal. It also exists on shell.azure.com. And this is platformed on top of Kubernetes as well. And this is one of the production services that runs on this orchestrator. And it offers the power to run a full global Azure service on top of it. So yeah, from a business perspective, it was kind of meeting the market trends and market demand and ensuring that customers can come in and satisfy their compute needs. And then we're at the stage now for the service that we need to make it easy for you to leverage any other Azure service from an AKS cluster. So that's things like Key Vault or storage, AAD, everything like that. And so Kubernetes hopefully becomes something that isn't so interesting, because hopefully that becomes boring one day because it's easy, right?
Right. Something's become stable when it's now boring and people have moved on to the next, bright and shiny thing. And it's just the ops people that are like, thank you for making this easy. I have enough on my plate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And I do want to say, so I'm a huge fan of Cloud Shell. So thank you for that. That makes my life a lot easier. It's, whenever I'm on an unfamiliar desktop or something, I don't have to worry, is the Azure CLI installed? Does it have all the right plugins? I just open Cloud Shell and, do whatever I need to do. So that's super convenient, and it's cool that it's running on Kubernetes.
Yeah, it's a super, super interesting product that has found a lot of interesting use cases. So one was just integration into our documentation. It's also become really useful for helping customers troubleshoot, because sometimes they'll have some funky settings on their specific client, and then we can kind of get a litmus test if they just go and try to repro.
Right. Yeah, that's true. You might have something totally messed up on your local desktop, but then you run it in Cloud Shell and it works, and you're like, okay, I think I know where the issue is now.
Yeah, exactly. Which is cool, because part of the impetus for that product itself was just it wasn't super easy back in the day to even get a client set up to use Azure. That's come like leaps and bounds, but part of that, I think, was driven by Cloud Shell itself being a product that showed the value and having an easy to get started experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also comes with kubectl already installed, as well as a bunch of other tools. So really, you can hit the ground running and have all your familiar tool sets with you.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
But this isn't a Cloud Shell podcast. I could talk about it the whole time, but yeah. So I know that products in Azure, they tend to go through sort of a private preview and then a public preview, and then eventually they're launched as generally available. As you know, AKS moved through that process, how did that product evolve through from the private preview all the way through the GA launch?
Yeah, so this service in particular has grown in an exponential fashion. It's grown in a way that some other services just haven't grown before. So with that came growing pains. I mean, We have invested a lot more people, a lot more resources into the service because it is an important investment for Azure all up. But yeah, in the early days, you know, whenever you work on a startup or just a new product, you kind of have to prove that there is that viability, prove that there is a market out there. And there was always the hypothesis, but in the early days, you're kind of in the phase of, you know, what exactly is the investment that we should make? What is going to be the future? And over time, the product has proved itself to be pretty important for all customers and the cloud in general. So that investment has gone up. But yeah, definitely in the early days, there was a shaky start. I mean, the experience wasn't super smoothed out. The features were more limited. But definitely within the past year, definitely since GA, the features have started to land. We have a lot of them in preview that we'll be bringing GA before the end of the year. And just being able to operate it, service it, ensure that customers get the right kinds of notifications, that's the stuff that we are always taking as P0. So getting the right operators in, getting the right developers in, the right resourcing, ensuring that we staff our open source teams as well, because any kind of innovation is going to have to funnel back through the upstream project. And that's something that Azure in particular has invested a lot in. So with projects that I mentioned, like Virtual Kubelet, there's things like CSI drivers so that you can mount Key Vault volumes. These things are important for the broader community, but also important for solving the problems for our customers. And so you kind of get into this catch-22 moment where the reason people want Kubernetes is because it is open source and it is not as opinionated and it is this generic API. But there's also a lot of Azure-specific solutions and niceties that we want to give our customers. So we need to make sure those funnel back in through the upstream project. So yeah, within the Azure org, you'll see a ton of projects crop up in there. And I think it's just been a balance of how do we make sure that we're integrated into the community, investing properly there, investing into the actual service, and finding that happy balance and medium between the two of them so that we can lift up the community as we lift up the service.
Yeah, I mean, it is an open source project, at least Kubernetes is an open source project after all. So it makes sense that you really want to embrace that community. And I guess with Brandon there as well, I'm sure he's keeping a firm eye on making sure that it stays open source and very friendly to the community.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a term that I'm not familiar with, a P0. So when you say an issue is a P0, I'm assuming that's like Microsoft lingo. What does that mean?
Yeah, depending on the team that you go to, they'll have different lingo. That's one that I just make for clarity. It's like priority zero.
Okay.
You know, this is no matter which way you spin it, this is always going to have to happen. And whenever, you know, we have the inevitable conversations about trade-offs, which happens basically every moment of my life, there's those P0s that you never budge on. And so being able to service for our customers and give them the right support that they need is always going to be that P0.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more frustrating as a customer when software gives you really vague and unhelpful error messages or doesn't indicate that something's gone wrong and you just kind of have to find it out on the sly. So I can see why that would be a really big priority for making sure that information is being, you know, served up to the clients that are using AKS whenever something's going wrong, or not even wrong, but just events are happening that they might need to know about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the surface area of some of the stuff that we have to make transparent, but managed and like help educate users, but not totally abstract them from, is interesting because we're still kind of in this middle ground between IaaS and PaaS. And, you know, there's always the questions of which one should it be? Should it be in the middle? Because, yeah, like a good example here is something that we're currently investing in is making sure that we properly version and publish what the versions of all the components are in your AKS cluster. Okay. So there's Kubernetes. So we make that version super transparent, but there's also like Mobi, Core DNS. There's a bunch of different subcomponents that we are working to make sure that customers can see what it is and make it easy for them to upgrade it if they want. And so it's instrumenting some of these guardrails. That is another big investment for us.
Yeah, I imagine the idea is when you say, I want to move to the next version of Kubernetes and you see, I don't know, 1.14. Whatever is out, that upgrade might also drag along with it an upgrade of those other systems you're talking about, Mobi and Core DNS and all the other components that are part of AKS but aren't necessarily Kubernetes. So how do you make a determination which components to upgrade and which ones to leave for the next cycle?
Yeah, it's a good question. So today it's a little bit more brute force. If you do a Kubernetes upgrade, we will pull you onto the latest that we have for all of those other components. Mm-hmm. And what we want to enable is opting in for a little bit more granularity. Like maybe I only want a certain set of upgrades if there is an upgrade in Mobi or something like that.
Right.
And this is something that we don't do a great job of today that we'll hopefully have a much better solution for before the end of the year.
Okay. Yeah, I was curious, like in a situation where maybe a vulnerability or a security issue is discovered with, say, Mobi, what would the process be for getting all of the worker nodes updated to the latest version or the patched version that doesn't have that vulnerability?
Yeah. So today the typical path would be to upgrade your Kubernetes version, which would then pull an upgrade of everything else. Mm-hmm. And that's just not a great solution right now. It's not a great experience either. So that in particular is the scenario that we're going to make significantly better.
Got to unbundle those components a little bit. I know I've dealt with that a lot, or I've seen that a lot when early versions of executables come out and they have a whole bunch of functionality that's all bundled into that executable. And then later the developers realize, oh, we actually want to pull some of that stuff out of the executable so it can iterate on its own. Kind of like how with Kubernetes had, I guess, all the different storage plugins were part of the Kubernetes main project. And then they created the CSI. So now anybody could write a plugin that, as long as it conforms to CSI, it'll work. So I guess it's a similar sort of situation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And this is just kind of coming back to how do we make it flexible and transparent, but easy enough? So another example here would be there might be components that are dependent on each other for a new version. So we have to kind of release these together as a bundle.
Right.
And we have to go and vet that and make sure. But it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like you're really walking a balance beam on letting the customer see enough and have enough control, but still make it a managed service where it's the easy button as opposed to running their own Kubernetes cluster and IaaS or something. So that's a very difficult question. So in order to make that determination, do you go and poll existing customers to kind of figure out what they want to see? Or do you just argue about it internally? What's sort of the decision-making process there?
Yeah, it's all of the above, you know, like we always want to stay close to the customer, but this is also a world where there might be certain customers who don't want to change up how they operate. Mm. And a lot of the times, some of the innovation really comes from delivering something that customers don't know they need or don't know that they can operate in that world yet. Mm-hmm. And so being bold around some of those investments. So it's really a trade-off and it's a balance. We need to make sure that we can give the customers what they need, because unlike a consumer product, this is something that people need to do their jobs. This is something that, you know, really critical workloads need to get on. But we also need to make it so that we can get to a better world. Because some of the operations that people are really comfortable with today, they're comfortable with because not they're the best solution, but that they know they work. Mm-hmm. And so how do we really push that? And that falls on us to really build out a solution that is flexible and reliable and easy to use. So this is some of the stuff that I'm hoping that you'll see come from AKS next, like within the next year.
Right. Sort of like before cars were invented, if you asked a person, what do you want? They'd ask for a faster horse. But if you just gave them a car, they'd be like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess in that regard,
yeah, exactly.
You know, the customers might have some idea of what they want, going back to like just core business requirements. But then the actual technical implementation, that's something that, you know, has to be more from your side, or at least most of the time, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. And then every step of that way is also just tightly coupled with the customer as well. Because as soon as we get something that we think, hey, maybe this is a different way, we need to go validate that immediately. So that's something that's really at the core of anything that we do and invest in. It's just once we start on that new investment, you know, what are the pieces that we're really taking as the most important input? Mm-hmm. And once we start to get to go, that's always from the customer.
Right. And I know when I spin up an AKS cluster, I have the option to go into sort of the preview versions of Kubernetes, but only so far. Mm-hmm. There are like mm-hmm. alpha features and beta features that are out there. Are you planning to increase how far out someone can go in that selector?
In terms of Kubernetes versions?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the preview version is something that we brought in back in May.
Okay.
And this is really like for the operators that are like, I have something that I really want to use in that version, or I really want to be on that specific version of the bleeding edge. And this is a way for you to throw that on dev test, see how your workload runs, and, you know, kind of wait before you roll it to production. So this week we made a release that brought 1.14 into GA.
Okay.
And then next week we'll be bringing in 1.15 into preview. And that's really what the intent is there. Let customers take it for a stroll on dev test and start to get a little bit of exposure for our customers after we've done our internal testing. Mm-hmm. And once we feel like it's fully matured, it's gotten a few patch versions and it's gotten some mileage even in the upstream community, then we'll bring it into GA. But in general, I think you can expect that preview version to be one prior to latest and upstream. So that's generally what you should expect.
Okay. Very cool. Now we're almost a year in, or a little over a year into AKS being generally available. And you're running this service at, you know, pretty massive scale. I have to imagine that you run into sort of at scale type problems. Are you able to share a few of the problems you've discovered as customers kind of poked and prodded at the limits of what AKS and Kubernetes can do?
Yeah, that's so one of our engineers, his name is Cal. I can't remember where it was published, but there have actually been some interesting experiments on stress testing, just how far you can really go mm-hmm. on Kubernetes in general. From a service operator perspective, something that our engineering teams do regularly is just really thorough design ahead of time to avoid some of the limits that you might hit on a rapidly growing service. And some of this is stuff that customers are probably familiar with, even things like ARM limits. How many resources can I have in a subscription? How many disks can I have in a subscription? How many API calls can I make per subscription? This is stuff that we have to work around with as well and design ahead of time. We obviously talk to the ARM team and any other internal Azure teams to make sure that we're doing this properly, mm-hmm. but we are not exempt from having some magic subscription that has no limits. So we end up having to architect around that a little bit. For how fast we're going the service, we're definitely pushing the previous, maybe some of the previous boundaries that some services have pushed. but we're doing it in a way that is known to be scalable because we did that design work ahead of time. Any type of growing pain that you might expect from, you know, a rapidly growing service, we need to do all of the things that any business needs to do. We need to document these things well. We need to get the proper headcount and investment. We need to do the proper design up front and share all this knowledge broadly internally. That's something in particular that we are really invested in, is coming back to what I mentioned earlier, which is making sure that all other Azure services run really well on AKS. Because if this is a platform that people want as their, you know, core container infrastructure, then some of the really cool stuff happens with some of the other strong services that we have, like Cosmos right. DB, for example.
Is Cosmos DB currently running on AKS, or does it have its own platform that it's running on today?
Cosmos is a little bit different today, but there is some really cool stuff that we're planning in terms of using AKS with Cosmos, leveraging some of the unique traits of Cosmos to make AKS itself a little bit easier to run or a little bit more resilient. Mm. So that's the stuff that I think will be interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah. I guess another thing that you'd kind of put in the notes to talk about was bottlenecks moving throughout the cluster. So can you expand on what you mean when you say bottlenecks moving through the cluster?
Yeah, so part of the thing that also makes Kubernetes in particular unique to manage is we can provide you all of the things out of the box to run your cluster. But when you go and deploy your pods and your workloads, whether or not it runs super well will also be dependent on how you've architected your pods and how you've architected your cluster. And being able to separate when the service might need servicing versus when your design and deployments might need servicing is something that's a fine line. Right. So an example here is you might have some pod that's running amok, and it's just constantly killing nodes when it gets scheduled. And this just means you didn't put like a resource limit or something like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will overload some clusters, and the resources allotted for certain components might just not be enough. And so working around all of these different critical points in a cluster and making it one, scalable and resilient for whatever a customer might throw on it is something that AKS is rapidly investing in and right. really considers important.
Yeah, I can imagine like one thing is just the resource limitations of the components that make up AKS, because I know you're using Azure virtual machines for the nodes, and you're using Azure networking for all the networking to put these things together, and you're using either Azure files or disks on the back end. So whatever limitations exist between like bandwidth between the VM and the managed disk, or number of IP addresses you can have in a VNet, or number of NICs, I guess all that feeds back into what AKS can do. Is there one particular service that has been more of a limitation than another? I'm not asking you to talk bad about any of the services. These are just natural limitations. I'm just curious if there's something you've seen with customers, they're like, I just wish X was a little bit faster or had a bigger limit.
Yeah. So probably the most common issue is some of the constraints around basic load balancers.
Okay.
Networking isn't the easiest experience right now. That's something that needs to improve. Basic load balancer in general is just kind of an old product from networking, which is why we've been pushing so hard to get the support of standard load balancers in here. So that is in preview, and we will be bringing that to GA probably within the next month. And so this is really addressing things like snap port exhaustion, not being able to have TCP resets. And, you know, when you networking is one that's particularly not fun to debug. And it's something that just in general needs to get a little bit easier. That's the kind of stuff that we're investing in as well. So making sure that we can get the latest and greatest that's offered from Azure networking, get it working very nicely within AKS. Another example of an investment there is the application gateway ingress. So that's something that the networking team has been working on. It's an open source project. You can roll it yourself, but that's something that we'll be taking into the AKS service as a first-class experience soon. Okay. And so hopefully you'll have this customer experience where we have a lot of these managed, easy-to-use, one-click deployment solutions, and then you can get that. But if you want to go and roll your own special thing, you can still do that.
Have you found any limitations from the Kubernetes side of things where a feature or a plugin or something didn't move the way you wanted to or doesn't work the way you want it to? And I understand that's part of the reason Microsoft is so heavily involved in the Kubernetes open source project is, you know, you have your own needs that you're trying to address. Is there something in particular that's been missing that Microsoft went in and created specifically for AKS?
Yeah, so I think probably the biggest ones here, one, virtual kubelet was one that wasn't a direct need, but once we landed it, there was a ton of traction. Hmm. There was a ton of use cases where people were like, I really want this, you know, that Black Friday scenario, or even just that situation where you pre-provisioned a fleet, but maybe you, you know, your forecast was under forecasted. You still have this like last solution where you can deploy out to this service that's kind of here for you with a dedicated SLA. The other aspect would be things like AAD pod identity, the Key Vault CSI driver. Those two projects in particular are also addressing customer problems that just really aren't being satisfied yet. Mm. So I think those are probably the ones that come to mind first.
Okay. And the AAD identity, does that allow pods to leverage Azure Active Directory for authentication? Is that kind of the idea?
Yep. Yeah. So you can go then and authorize those at a pod level, which is very nice. Because setting up service principles kind of sucks.
Yeah, I was thinking like, if I wanted to use managed service identities, I could do that at the node level because you can give an Azure VM an identity, but I didn't realize there was a way to do mm-hmm. that at the pod level, which is where you would really want it most of the time. Is it's the pod that's asking for access to some resource, not the node.
Right, exactly.
Right. So the other one, the Key Vault CSI, that is that so you can mount Key Vault as if it's a storage mount on a pod and then get access to stuff that's in Key Vault?
Yep, exactly.
Okay. So yeah, if I wanted to load my certificates or use secrets or whatever, I could now just add that as a volume mount point on my pod and access that information directly.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. I'm going to have to try some of that stuff out.
Yeah, in general, all of the kind of newer features that you can probably expect in AKS, the early versions of it will manifest as an open source project. Mm-hmm. So you can go and roll this stuff yourself. The stuff that we're doing on the service side is just making sure that one, it's stable, we can properly support it, we've got the right experience with the service. Mm-hmm. But looking up into the upstream open source stuff is a good way to kind of catch what some of the new investments we have are.
Cool. So keep an eye on those GitHub repositories, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you could go back, 3 years or whatever and wave a magic wand, what's something you might change about the initial designer launch of AKS?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some of the obvious ones is knowing what we know now, kind of just throw a lot of weight behind it. I think in general, we were ahead of the curve at a pretty good point in time, but just kind of double down, go extra heavy on it. But otherwise, I think we did a lot of these things right. There's obviously some things that we have been changing in design as we go that you can expect naturally out of any software that we wish we would have done at the very start. But I think overall, things have moved quite well. You know, we've got the right set of things we need to do. We've got great people working on it. But on that note, we're also always hiring good people who want to work on stuff like this. So anyone that's interested in coming to work on this stuff, reach out on Twitter. You can ping me. You can ping people on the team. GitHub is also a great place for that.
Awesome. I usually ask guests to summarize 3 key takeaways from their experience. So if you could, you know, kind of think about everything that we talked about, what are some key takeaways that you would have for the listeners today?
Yeah, number one, I would say, you know, at the onset, you probably have some set of principles that you're ready and willing to follow. I would say that kind of comes into the strong opinions, loosely held type of thing, mm-hmm. where you want to maintain that identity as you're going to grow through some of these changes. You're going to get a lot of input that you previously didn't get. Being able to be flexible, but still confident in what you originally set out to do, that is definitely just an all-up important thing to keep in mind. And the second one would be really care about your team that you're working with. I think that's something that, in particular, Microsoft has gotten a lot better about as we've kind of seen this renaissance kind of hit the company. Azure, in particular, is investing a lot in that as well. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to be working on something that's difficult, and it's going to get extra difficult if it's growing at a rapid pace. And coming in every day, having the right mindset, working with the right people, caring a lot about your customers, that's the kind of stuff and some of those principles that's going to, you know, get driving towards success, making sure that you can service all of this growth. And then the last one, I would just say for anyone that's working on it or going through that, be patient with yourself, be patient with others. You know, day to day, there's always urgent work to do. There's always, you know, something super important, but you can still have that degree of importance and not, you know, burn yourself out or anything like that.
Right, right. I like that. Be patient with yourself, above all. I know a lot of people I know, and me myself, I'm very impatient with myself, but I'm patient with other people. And it's hard to learn to be patient with yourself and let yourself learn at the pace that you can actually learn at and produce good output for. So that's, I like that tip a lot. If people want to know more about AKS and Kubernetes, where could they go to learn more about the topic?
Yeah, so aka.ms/AKS/K8S learning. Mm-hmm. That's a good spot that we put a lot of collateral if you're just getting started or you want to brush up on some stuff. I would also say the AKS repo on GitHub, that's somewhere that we all actively monitor issues. We put our roadmap and we put our release notes. So that's the best public spot for you to come in and get the latest and greatest news. And also everyone who works on the team really cares about our customers. So if you tweet at any of us, we'll probably respond super, super quick. So, you know, don't be a stranger on Twitter. Mine is just @whosjluk. I think that's some good collateral to get you started. But otherwise, our docs, that's also something that we invest in a lot. We've got a great docs team. And I think there's just a wealth of content in there that we'll also be investing in going on.
Awesome. So I will include links in the show notes for listeners if you want to go check it out. In the meantime, I highly recommend following, you know, the various team members on Twitter. And, you know, that's how I reached out to you for this. So you guys are definitely responsive.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Justin, for being on Day 2 Cloud. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Justin for appearing on Day 2 Cloud. And thanks to you, dear listener, for tuning in. Day 2 Cloud is available wherever fine podcasts are found. So if you like what you hear, please rate and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. If you have suggestions for future shows, I'd love to hear them. Hit me up on Twitter, Ned1313, or fill out the form on my website, nedinthecloud.com. If you'd like to hear more entertaining and educational content, then I encourage you to check out the other podcasts on the Packet Pushers Network, especially my favorites, Data Knots and Network Break. Until then, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.